Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit the apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but don't you know?
Yeah, we did. We started to burn too many things we found. It's the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. That song was recorded in Beacon, New York, with Pete Seeger and David Burns and the great Dar Williams 2 years ago, and we are going to be talking now about the nuclear plant. Start with the nuclear plant near Beacon, New York, this Indian Point nuclear power plant. We got three great guests. We're going to do a round robin for the first half hour on Indian Point, and then the second half hour we're going to be joined from California by Rochelle Becker to talk about the nuclear plant at Diablo, California, Diablo Canyon, California, which is looking forward, we hope, to a rapid, safe, and successful shutdown, which has been negotiated with Pacific Gas and Electric, although a lot of questions are being asked about that. But first, we want to start with Indian Point. We have three great people, as I mentioned, with you. We're going to start with Manajo Green, and then Gary Shaw and Kevin Camps, then from the Beyond Nuclear organization. And we're going to do a round robin. It's a little challenging sometimes to have three guests on the phone. So I want to start with Manajo. Just tell us recently what's going on at Indian Point, how we're moving ahead. Hopefully you get it shut down, and then we'll talk with Gary Shaw, also from the Indian Point area, and then Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear to give us a national and international perspective. I hope that works for everybody. Indian Point, of course, is the two reactors at Buchanan, north of New York City, plagued with terrible problems over the years, and currently operating without a license, for God's sakes. So much more to talk about that, but I'm going to leave it to the locals. Manajo, are you with us?
I sure am, Harvey.
All right, Manajo. So tell us, please, and then Gary and Kevin will follow, what is the latest in Indian Point? What do our prospects look for shutting it down? And why, actually, after all, are people going to be demonstrating tomorrow, I believe, or Sunday at the home of Governor Cuomo about all this? So jump on in, Manajo, and then we'll go to Gary and Kevin.
Okay, well, I want to start by saying that a month ago I wrote a Huffington Post, and I called it More Nuts Than Bolts, because it was absolutely ridiculous to rush to restart Indian Point Unit 2 after 227 of the 832 bolts that hold the baffle plates to the former plates inside the reactor were faulty. They were degraded, they were broken, or they were even, in some cases, completely missing. A highly dangerous situation, and what they did was they put a Band-Aid on it in the sense that they replaced the bolts, but they never got to the root cause of the problem. They have a very superficial determination of what the root cause was, a form of embrittlement from irradiation, but really they didn't wait till the metallurgic report was back. There are more than 50 serious unanswered questions. And I'm now calling Indian Point the yo-yo because we don't know whether it's up or down. On June 16th, after being down for a prolonged period of time to repair and replace the bolts, the plant was, Indian Point 2 was brought back online, and a week later it had an emergency unplanned shutdown because of a leak in the cooling system and a need to repair a well. They fixed that. It was back up. And yesterday it came back down again for an electrical problem. And so this is the ninth unplanned outage in the last year, in addition to this major problem inside the reactor having to do with faulty bulbs. And Clearwater thinks that this is symptomatic of an aging facility that doesn't have proper oversight. We have an owner who's not taking full responsibility and doing preventive maintenance, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is not providing adequate oversight. So that's it in a nutshell. Four nuts and bolts, and now it's turned into this yo-yo, up and down, up and down.
Well, let's talk. Thank you, Manager. Let's move ahead with Gary. Gary Shaw, you are vocal. Tell us what is happening with the efforts to shut Indian Point and add, throw in anything else you want to with what Manager has told us.
Well, just to expand a little on what Manish said, and she's absolutely right about the picture that she's painted. And by the way, my organization is the Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition. We have a website that's IPSICinfo.org, and we have a Facebook page, so there's a lot of information that you can find there. But just to go a step further about what Manna just said, the, you know, as you mentioned at the beginning, Indian Point is a plant with two reactors, neither of which have valid licenses at this point. And Indian Point 3 is basically the same design as Indian Point 2. So not only haven't they done a root cause analysis of the baffle bolt problem in Indian Point 2, but they decided not to shut down Indian Point 3 and do the same inspection to see if that reactor had the same problem. And the baffle sheets are all about cooling the reactor core. So basically we're playing Russian roulette with Indian Point all the time. In terms of relicensing, most relicensings take about 2 to 3 years to get done. We are in the ninth year of them deciding whether to relicense these aged and degraded plants. There are still hearings going on. I'm happy to say that the New York State Attorney General's office is pursuing a lot of contentions. The governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, has been trying to close Indian Point for years and years, although I think he's sort of schizophrenic because he's trying to classify the three upstate nuclear plants, one of which is owned by Entergy, who owns Indian Point, and he's trying to include them in what's called the Clean Energy Standards for New York State so that we could have 50% clean energy by 2030. And so he's really sort of schizophrenic, and one of the ironic parts is that the operators of two of those three upstate nuclear plants have already declared that they're going to shut them. But Mario Cuomo wants to get them subsidized to keep them running, even though they're not profitable and can't compete in the market anymore.
But he is working to shut. This is Andrew Cuomo, by the way. You dated yourself by calling him Mario.
So yes, it's Andrew Cuomo who's the schizophrenic one.
Gary, you dated yourself calling the governor Mario instead of Andrew. That maybe that's where we lost the connection there. But
old folks.
Yeah. cell phones and governors' names—they really trip us up all the time. So are you saying, you know, it's well known that Andrew Cuomo has been in court apparently trying to shut down Indian Point. Are you, but I know there's a demonstration at his house on Sunday, and I am planning, by the way, to speak at the IPSEC convergence meeting
at Stony Point on Sunday. Right.
Stony Point, and people are welcome to come.
What time are you speaking, by the way? Do you know?
The meeting is generally from 1:30 to 5. I'm not sure exactly when.
Okay, I think it'll be there around 2 or so. But what is it about what Andrew Cuomo is doing here at Indian Point that does not seem to ring entirely true?
Well, you know, I believe they're negotiating. You know, Andrew Cuomo has been a long-term opponent of Indian Point, and so I'm not sure that he's being disingenuous. But the only people who can actually shut down a nuclear plant is the NRC. And as far as I'm concerned, Entergy is nothing more than another greedy corporation who puts profits above everything. To me, the real villain of this drama is the NRC, because they're charged with protecting the public health and safety, and all they do is cut corners and don't enforce all of the regulations that they're doing. New York State has done a lot of things, including the Department of State saying that Indian Point does not live up to the standards of the coastal management standards of New York State. The Attorney General has filed numerous suits against the plant. So basically, I think what they're really trying to do is, because nuclear is really no longer competitive in a deregulated energy market, you know, they're sort of starving Indian Point to death. And I don't think that the NRC will ever close a nuclear plant unless there's a major accident.
Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear, you followed all these things. What are you predicting about what's going to happen with Indian Point in the near future?
Yeah, good to be on with y'all. I'm speaking to you from Kalamazoo, Michigan, which is 35 miles downwind of another Entergy atomic reactor called Palisades. And Manageo and Gary did a great job. I mean, Manageo said some magic words: embrittlement of the reactor pressure vessel, and in Indian Point's case, the bolts on the baffle formers at the core of the core, so to speak, essential to cooling water flow direction. So just incredible. So at Palisades, you've got the most embrittled reactor pressure vessel in the country because of neutron radiation embrittlement, which, as Manageo hinted, could be the root cause of the bolt failure at Indian Point. And Indian Point Unit 3 is actually, you know, in competition with Palisades for the worst embrittled reactor pressure vessel in the country. And so the risk here is called pressurized thermal shock. You hit the emergency core cooling system button, you pour cold water into one of these reactor pressure vessels, and you fracture the vessel like a hot glass under cold water. Only in a pressurized water reactor, you're under a ton of pressure per square inch. You fracture the vessel, you've lost containment of the cooling water. It turns to steam, it escapes. You have a core meltdown, and if the containment structures fail, massive radioactivity releases. At Indian Point, 20 million people within a 50-mile radius. So, and then Gary also hit it on the nose where, you know, Entergy's business model is buy them dirt cheap and run them into the ground, and we're seeing that across the country, including at Indian Point and Palisades. So some good news is Entergy gave a briefing to investors about a month ago, and they hinted very loudly that they would like to get out of the merchant nuclear business. They're losing money left and right. UBS, United Bank of Switzerland, energy analysts who have predicted Vermont Yankees closure, the closure announcements at Fitzpatrick, Pilgrim, other Entergy plants, just said Palisades needs to announce closure this autumn, needs to close by next spring. And the thing is, like Tim Judson at NIRS has pointed out, you lose Palisades, you also lose Indian Point. You lose Indian Point, you also lose Palisades. The merchant nuclear fleet at Entergy is history. We need to shut them down before they melt down.
Okay, so how do we do that exactly? Manageo, what is the magic button now to push to get Indian Point shut down?
Well, I think there are a lot of different ways to approach this. One is economic. And we have been in communication with the governor's office and are reaching out to people at the state. There are very specific things that can happen that will make it more expensive to operate the plant and reduce the profit margin even though the plants in the western part of the state are not competitive, they're not profitable, because electricity in the greater New York metropolitan area is so expensive, Indian Point has the potential to be profitable, but with all the problems it's had, it's been down as much as up. And so they really are starting to lose money. But there are things like taxing the waste that is being stored on site to enrich a decommissioning fund. That would be a way, that would be something the state could do. We expect that the governor's office is going to issue a very powerful investigative report. Ever since the tritium spike, which preceded the faulty bolt, the state has created an oversight group of the different departments to really watch closely what is going on at Indian Point, and they are going to be issuing what I think will be a very damning report. And then I also think that in addition to sort of political, well, that's state level. At the federal level, we're calling for a hearing. We think that Indian Point is being treated differently than other reactors. Not that he is doing such a great job with other reactors, but we think they're being especially lax with Entergy at Indian Point, and we are calling for a series of hearings, starting with the 50 or more unanswered questions about the bulk, the situation with the bulk inside the reactor core. But there are many other concerns that we want to see addressed. So there's the economics, there's the political pressure at the state and federal level, and our goal is before, as Kevin alluded, before this facility closes New York. It's an extremely dangerous situation.
There's one other thing,
I'm not sure if Gary touched on it, but the other thing that causes me to lose sleep at night is the fact that the fuel pools are so overcrowded that there could actually be a spontaneous fuel pool fire. Part of the aging process includes the fact that the Boraflex liners that are supposed to absorb neutrons between the rods that are stored in these large racks in the fuel pools that are essentially oversized swimming pools, those have been degrading over the years. And the situation is so bad that they can't even put a camera in there and visualize the extent of the problem inside the fuel pools, the leaks and other issues. And yet, they continue to allow the plant to operate, which creates more waste fuel. They're not moving that fuel out into hardened dry cask storage as we have recommended, just because they don't want to invest the money. But they are putting people's health and safety and the environment at great risk to maximize the profit.
And just to put some numbers behind what Manu was just saying about the spent fuel pools, the spent fuel pools at Indian Point 2 and Indian Point 3 were both designed to contain 264 fuel assemblies each. They currently have over 1,300 in each of those spent fuel pools. So it's more
than
5.
Will you say that again, Gary? Will you say that again? That's staggering.
The spent fuel pools in their original design concept were intended to contain no more than 264 spent fuel assemblies, spent fuel assemblies are these racks with fuel with irradiated fuel rods that are no longer viable to create new electricity. So they were designed to do 264 each, and each of them now has over 1,300 spent fuel assemblies in the spent fuel pools now, and the NRC doesn't see a problem with that. They've reconfigured it, and they say everything is just hunky-dory. We're playing Russian roulette here. One other thing I'd like to mention is that one of the other things that New York State is trying to do, Indian Point uses a once-through cooling system that uses 2.5 billion, that's with a B, 2.5 billion gallons of Hudson River water every single day to cool the reactors. And we kill billions and billions of fish and lower aquatic species. So they violate the U.S. Clean Water Act. The state has been suing them to try and force them to put in closed cycle cooling, which would be another very expensive proposition for Entergy. And they're struggling. You know, they're not profitable anymore. The deregulated market does not support nuclear anymore. So that's another one of the strategies that's both environmentally oriented and could be extremely costly and be the key to make them shut the plant.
Well, Kevin Camps, from a national perspective, within the last month or so, we have had announcements of three reactor shutdowns in Illinois, Three Mile Island Unit 1, Fort Calhoun in Nebraska, and two shutdowns, although we're going to talk about them in the next half hour, at Diablo Canyon, bringing that number to 7. Do we have any indication that Entergy might throw in the towel at Indian Point since they are losing money?
Yeah, you're right. It's record-breaking numbers of reactor closure announcements, if not outright closures. Entergy had announced closure dates for Fitzpatrick, New York, in January 2017, and Pilgrim, Massachusetts, by mid-2019. And folks like Cape Town Winders have something to say about waiting another, 3 years to shut down Pilgrim. And also talk of, Palisades closing for financial reasons, so to speak, even though they're not making safety repairs, they're gouging ratepayers. Still, UBS is calling for closure of Palisades by spring 2017. So Entergy Nuclear's merchant fleet is over. It's over. It's on coast down mode. But the dangers are so great of a meltdown before mid-2019 or even spring 2017 or at Indian Point, which hasn't announced closure yet. In this election year, I wanted to make a modest proposal to Hillary Clinton and to Bernie Sanders and to Elizabeth Warren, and that is for the vice presidential nomination, and that is that the senior senator from Massachusetts, Ed Markey, be the one, because he has been the watchdog in Congress for 40-plus years on these risks. And just to follow up on Gary and Manageau, he just put out a press release a few days ago, as he has for 4 decades now, again calling on NRC to address these risks of high-level radioactive waste storage pools. And, just a month ago or 6 weeks ago, the National Academy of Sciences put out a report, Fukushima Lessons Learned, how very close to a pool fire they came at Fukushima Daiichi Unit 4. It was avoided by sheer luck. A gate between the reactor cavity and the pool leaked. They don't even know why. And water flooded from the reactor cavity into the pool, prevented a fire. Prime Minister Kan of Japan, who was serving at the time that this catastrophe began, has said repeatedly in public that because of the risk of a pool fire, he was planning to evacuate all of northeastern Japan. 35 to 50 million people, the closest we have to that in this country is at Indian Point, 20 million people within 50 miles. So, we are on the verge of, as you put it, Harvey, in your Solartopia, not a wave of reactor meltdowns, but a wave of reactor shutdowns. And that is the challenge, to get that done before the other happens.
Well, let me ask real quick, Gary, I know you're going to have to leave, Gary. These the bolts that have disintegrated inside the reactor cores at Indian Point, is this a generic situation? Do we think that these bolts are similarly deteriorating at other reactors? around the country?
I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be the case. You know, the reactors are all using 1960s technology. Indian Point 3 is this virtually the same Westinghouse design that Indian Point 2 is. You know, the very notion that the NRC would not want to shut them down, and the reason is, by the way, is because we're coming into the peak energy usage season of the summer when everybody puts on their air conditioner. But I also want to point out that Entergy spins a false tale that they are supplying a huge amount of energy to the New York City and Westchester grid, when the reality is that the New York Power Authority no longer buys a single megawatt from them, and that Con Edison, who provides the electricity for all private housing and businesses, only has a contract for 560 megawatts. So most of Indian Point's energy is going outside of the downstate grid. So we're getting very little benefit from them to begin with.
Manager, do you want to add to that?
Well, I want to pick up on something that that Kevin said. With all these reactor closures, as a society, we are not prepared with adequate decommissioning plans or decommissioning funds to address safe shutdown and storage, on-site storage, in a way that makes sense and is most protective of public health and safety and the environment. In the case of the merchant power plants, they do have a decommissioning fund, but they're basing the adequacy of that fund over long-term investments in the stock market, which is unreliable, to build up that fund to cover those costs over the period of 60 years or 120 years, where when the New York Power Authority and Con Ed were regulated, they needed to have the full amount of decommissioning in a fund available, and we all need to figure out what the safest way to close and decommission these facilities is. And it's just a really big gap in future planning that I want to bring up so that more people will realize how important it is to address that.
Okay, we're speaking with Manager Green and Gary Shaw from upstate New York, who live near the Indian Point nuclear plant, and Kevin Camps from National Group Beyond Nuclear. Gary, I know you've got to go. Do you want to say a last word before you go? Our second half hour is going to be, we're going to be talking with Rochelle Becker about Diablo Canyon and the New Deal there. So, Gary, you want to jump on for a minute or two?
Well, the one thing I do want to say is that in addition to the horrendous danger of the nuclear plants themselves, the Spectra fracked methane pipeline is being laid right next to the Indian Point nuclear plant. What could go wrong having a 42-inch diameter pipeline right next to a nuclear plant? It's just, we are insane. We are just
insane. It is insane. I will say that a major pipeline going through western Massachusetts has just been stopped, so I hope that this one can be stopped in New York.
And
Gary,
that's what
Shaw,
the demonstration is going to be about on Sunday night outside of the governor's home.
Oh, I see.
The governor's home.
To stop
the pipeline and shut the plant.
Beautiful. Well, good luck with that. Gary Shaw, thank you so much for being
thank
with
you,
us.
Thank you, Harvey.
We're going to move ahead now. Rochelle Becker, are you on the line? Rochelle Becker?
Yes.
I think we have Rochelle Becker joining us from California. At some point, pipe up, Rochelle, when you're on.
I'm on.
Oh, you are on. Okay, great. So we have been talking for a half hour now, Rochelle, with Kevin Camps and Manager Green about Indian Point. We want to, and they're staying on, by the way, Manager or Kevin, if you need to drop off, let me know. I know, Manager, you're driving. Rochelle Becker, you're one of the great heroes of the movement in California all these decades to shut the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant.
the two reactors there at San Luis Obispo, where I spent three lovely nights in the county jail in 1984. And I want to ask you, of course, the whole world has been notified that Pacific Gas and Electric has agreed, at least in principle, to shut Diablo Canyon by the expiration of its licenses. Now, one thing we note is that the two reactors at Indian Point are operating without licenses, without valid licenses. And so if you can just throw that into the mix and describe for us the deal that has been cut with Pacific Gas and Electric, we'd love to hear it. And you were one of the parties to the negotiation, so please do tell us what you want us to hear about this deal.
Oh, sure, Javi. Well, the deal actually started quite some time ago. About a year ago, PG&E started their response to media concerns about whether or not they were going to relicense the plant. PG&E's executive directors started saying, "We haven't made up our minds yet. We're not sure. There's a lot of issues that are before us, and we really haven't made up our mind." On top of that, you had several state agencies who were about to issue permits, and PG&E wasn't certain they could get those permits and there wouldn't be a longer holdup. And then on top of that, they had filed for a license renewal in 2009-2010 timeframe, and for the funding from the Public Utilities Commission about that time, and the Alliance had filed in that case opposing any funding for license renewal. We had prevailed in the case. The case was dismissed after the accident in Japan, so everything had been on hold for a while, with various state agencies beginning to take a very serious look about whether or not they would continue to allow the plant to operate without meeting current California law. Then on top of that, you have the numerous power plants across the country who are recently, about 14 of them in the last 5 or 6 years, who have not been able to continue to operate their plants because they're no longer cost-effective. And I believe that PG&E started to see the handwriting all over everyone's wall and decided that they would be best off deciding to not continue to operate that plant, to work with their employees, to work with environmentalists, to work with state agencies, and try to see if they could be the first power plant in the nation to actually glide into its ending and not have that be a surprise overnight. Could it be possible to plan for the eventual shutdown of a plant by the end of its current license, and what would that look like? And I believe that NRDC did an excellent job of going in there and saying the first thing you need is energy efficiency. We need to get over any humps that we may have as far as need goes, and we need to make sure that our energy efficiency programs are strong and are in place and are well-funded. In addition, we had Friends of the Earth come in, and their focus was renewables. This plant should only be replaced with greenhouse-free resources. So no gas, no oil, no coal, only renewable portfolio to replace the megawatts at this plant. So they spent some time, probably the beginning of this year, working with PG&E on a settlement for the what we would do with currently with Diablo Canyon. In the meantime, the Alliance was filed in what they call a general rate case. Every 3 years, the utility goes to the Public Utilities Commission, says we'd like X amount of dollars, and the parties who say that's way too much money or they need to be conditioned with X, Y, or Z file in this case to present their issues and present them to the PUC and get a hopefully impartial ruling. And during that procedure, the Alliance had raised numerous issues. PG&E had said no money in this general rate case for the next 3 years was for license renewal. We questioned that assumption. We questioned some of the numbers that they put into the case. We added several caveats and lists of things that they would be required to do before they could be allowed to get a rate increase for the next 3 years. We opposed a large project that they were putting in, saying this project wouldn't be for continued operation. It was really for license renewal, and they should quit hiding those issues. And so towards the end of the negotiations on whether or not to continue the operation of the plant, PG&E invited the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility to come in and talk about the issues that remained on the table in the general rate case, the county issues and the seismic issues, and could we come to some sort of an agreement. And after several days of very heated negotiations, the Alliance did agree to sign on to the settlement with one condition, well, actually with two conditions. One, that we would be allowed to present our full plethora of comments to the State Lands Commission last week, and we did submit 4,000 pages of documents, mostly on seismic issues, and we asked that the State Lands Commission be sure that they had weighed those documents before they made a decision. The only thing that we agreed not to do was to sue them if the State Lands Commission disagreed with us, but we did not stand in anyone else's way if they decided to sue the State Lands Commission. The second part of the agreement that we carved out was the money for license renewal. Should they be paid for any money for license renewal going forward, when they were told that this case had been put on hold in 2010 and that they would have to come back and refile the entire case before they would get paid for license renewal? And our position is no, they shouldn't get paid.
Okay, so you hit Rochelle Becker on the most controversial issue that's arisen since this deal was put out, and I will say that the deal was widely embraced because it appears to be a deal that's been endorsed by the union at the plant, which is a first, I think, a union coming forward to endorse a reactor shutdown. A large amount of money was set aside for what's called retain and retrain the workers at the site. Hopefully we'll have time to talk a little bit about that. It was embraced by the environmental groups and by FOA and the RDC and partly by A4NR, your organization, Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility. Now, and of course by the Pacific Gas and Electric. But in the interim now, there was a hearing in front of the State Lands Commission, three commissioners. And when Diablo was built or being built in the late 60s, they got leases from the state to use or impact some coastal land with their cooling system. And then in 1970, California passed the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, which was signed by Ronald Reagan, which requires environmental impact reporting on a wide range of projects. But even though Diablo had not yet been finished, they were grandfathered and allowed to finish the plant 15 years later and not do these environmental impact reports. Now, the leases were about to expire in 2017 and 18, I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Rochelle. And it came before the California Lands Commission that these leases, at least your group and other groups asserted that because these leases were about to be renewed, PG&E should be required to do environmental impact reports. And at the commission hearing on June 28th, the three commissioners from the California Lands Commission said no, that they did not, were not going to require EIRs, and that the leases would be renewed without them. And, of course, there's been a big uproar about that. So can you talk to us about that, Rochelle, and tell us what that situation involves?
Well, I can do my best. We met with all three commissioners more than once for the State Lands Commission. It was very clear to us that we did not have the votes to require that CEQA. And I believe the reason behind not having the votes was the fact that PG&E had agreed to close the plant, and that nothing in the agreement to not do the CEQA stood in PG&E's way if they decide to close the plant sooner. So this plant could close by 2018, 2019, 2020, even with the settlement in place. And had the CEQA review gone forward, some argued that they could be done simultaneously. Some said they possibly couldn't be argued simultaneously. We are unsure whether or not they could or couldn't. We were on the side that said they possibly could. But the plant was being closed, and we got absolutely everything we asked for. We got the plant closure. We got to are still able to oppose any funding for license renewal. We got money for the county, the continued tax payments to the county, which will continue until 2024-2025. We got continued funding by the shareholders for the nonprofits of the county, which should continue to the same date. We got, for the first in the nation, we got continued emergency services funding, off-site emergency services funding. As you know, Harvey, when nuclear power plants close within the first 2 years, the utilities have consistently filed to do away with any off-site emergency funding. Waste is still on site. It still hasn't been completely removed into dry cast systems. And so PG&E agreed to continue the funding for off-site emergency services until they no longer needed their Part 50 license, which means it would remain until all the components of the plant except for the waste, the reactors, all the secondary and tertiary buildings would be removed. And at that point, we would reconsider the emergency planning. And we hope that this will provide a precedent for San Onofre in the legislature next year, and it will provide a precedent nationwide for all nuclear power plants that are closed. So the closure, the non-relicensing of the plant is the mission statement of the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility. The CEQA review was not in our mission statement. We did support the CEQA review, but we also believe that this plant is definitely closing by 2024, more likely 2024 than 2025, and that there is every possibility that this plant could end up closing sooner. The workers are protected, they're retained, so people with institutional knowledge are continued to be there. The county is protected. The coastal seismic studies continue, and the license renewal funding can be challenged. If any safety issues arise, if any large financial issues arrived, there is nothing in the settlement that the joint proposed settlement that keeps any party from immediately going to either the Nuclear Regulatory Commission or any state agency to address cost shortfalls or safety shortfalls.
Well, there's been quite a bit of Rochelle Becker. There's been quite a bit of hostility towards the commissioners, the three commissioners, Gavin Newsom, Betty Yee, and Mr. Cohen, for allowing PG&E to get these licenses renewed without the environmental impact reporting as required by CEQA. What does A4NR feel about that?
Well, we think they should have done it, which is the reason we made our very strong comments on the day of the State Lands Commission. It's not that we thought that they should be allowed to waive the CEQA or that we should not be allowed to give our comments and present our documentation, which is, as I said, close to 4,000 papers. Well, the only thing we agreed to was not to sue those three commissioners if they made the wrong decision, but we left plenty of information for any other group who wanted to sue them right there in the record the day of the State Lands Commission decision. Why they decided to do that, I think one of the reasons was they had the Coastal Commission saying that this was a great this joint proposal to close the plant was a great step forward in changing the energy future of California. It had the Senate pro tem saying that this is a great deal for the state of California. Every major newspaper, this is a great deal for the state of California. I think that what the and I certainly don't want to put words in their mouth, and you can ask any of them, and they'll probably tell you, but my guess is that the reason that they voted not to do the CEQA review is that they felt like if they did, it would block the progress of getting in place the energy efficiency programs, the retention and retirement programs, and the renewable programs that will need to be actually done in a fairly bit of a hurry just to get them done by the 2024 date.
Is there any way that PG&E can wriggle out of this deal and turn around and ask for a renewed license or, as in the case of Indian Point, continue to operate without a license?
I think the chances of that are less than 10%.
Okay. And what do you think of, well, then you had wanted, obviously, the EIRs to be extended. What do you say to Gavin Newsom and to Betty Yee for not requiring them?
Well, what I think what I would say to them is we just gave you thousands of pages of documentation. There are other proceedings. We intend you to stay in the game. We intend you to continue to watch out and make sure PG&E does what they said that they were going to do. If PG&E doesn't live up to its word and doesn't do this second EIR, which that PG&E has agreed to do, and the State Lands Commission has made it abundantly clear that they must do in the next few years on decommissioning, which will require a full CEQA, that will be another point for the public to go back in and back in very strongly. And I doubt if any of them want that to happen, because they will all be running for statewide office during that period of time.
Manager Joe Green from Indian Point, do you have any questions to ask Rochelle Becker about this agreement at Diablo Canyon?
Well, I just want to congratulate the work that is being done, and in particular, the work with the unions. We have been trying to figure out how to reach across that divide and share with the workers at the plant our intention that after the plant closes that they are retained, the retirement plan. This is really groundbreaking work, as the whole plan is. But I do want to distinguish the fact that that Indian Point is operating with expired licenses, and I think, you know, our intention here is to close the plant as soon as possible and still end up with a kind of transition plan, a just transition for the workers, and, you know, a plan for safety commissioning, all of the things that I mentioned before. We want to take the best of what has been worked through at Diablo Canyon and apply it here, but we couldn't wait 5 years or 9 years to get this plant closed. As Gary said earlier, we are actively playing Russian roulette with the future of more than 50 million people in the greater New York metropolitan area and beyond. So actually, four states, New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut. That's only three states. Oh, yeah, there's a corner of Pennsylvania. Yeah,
Massachusetts as well.
So, you know, this is such a densely populated area, and with the track record of failures that Indian Point has already had, we just, you know, don't have that luxury, but we really do admire the work that was done in California at Diablo Canyon. And one other thing I want to mention is that because of deregulation, our Public Service Commission doesn't have the same jurisdiction over Entergy and Indian Point that its counterpart in California did, to be able to help this negotiation and the joint agreement be developed and come to fruition. There are other ways that they can try to address this. And I think the last thing I want to say is how important it is that future energy is going to be renewable energy and energy efficiency, and I think that's something that applies very definitely to the greater New York throughout the state, but in particular to the greater New York metropolitan area. And I want to commend the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority for doing some really advanced work on offshore wind and preparing to help that transition to occur. What we don't want is to have the nuclear plants shut down and burn more fossil fuel. We absolutely have to create a roadmap that avoids that. And California and Rochelle's group and everyone who participated in those negotiations have done a very admirable and successful job at that.
Thank you, Manager Joe. Kevin Camps, you want to chime in on this Diablo deal?
Yeah, just echo Manager Joe that, you know, huge congratulations to the Alliance and to NRDC and to Friends of the Earth for a really historic agreement. I mean, I have had the dubious privilege of sticking my neck into this Nuclear Rubber Stamp Commission license extension rubber stamp machine at places like Palisades in Michigan and Davis-Bessey in Ohio, and it is not pretty. It is a rigged process that may take a few years, but they are going to rubber stamp that thing. So both at Indian Point and at Diablo Canyon, folks have said, no way, it ain't happening, and succeeded to a large extent. And, you know, I did want to point out that, ironically enough, as risky the seismic situation at Diablo is, the worst seismic risks in the United States of America are at Indian Point, New York. And the reason for that is they didn't even know about the earthquake fault lines in the vicinity. They didn't build the plant very well to defend against that. It's not to detract from the risks at Diablo. They're huge. But the risks happen to even be greater at Indian Point because the plant is built so weakly. And even at Palisades here in Michigan, the high-level radioactive waste dry cask storage on the beach of Lake Michigan, maybe 100 yards or less from the water of Lake Michigan, drinking water for tens of millions of people in two countries, happens to be in violation of NRC earthquake safety regulations. So, you know, it is a tremendous victory to get the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers and even Pacific Gas and Electric to agree to this common sense, you know, plan for the next 10 years. I have to say that, you know, groups like Alliance for a Green Economy and NEARS, we just all got together at Stony Point, hosted by Clearwater and by IPSC, and they're doing the same kind of work in upstate New York, trying to, as Manager Joe said, lay down a just transition for the workers and for the host communities in terms of tax revenues. And we're trying to do the same thing in Michigan here, again with Entergy. And a group like Nuclear Energy Information Service in Chicago is doing the exact same thing in Illinois. The only group, not with the unions involved, not with the company involved, calling for this just transition for the workers, calling for tax revenues, post-reactor shutdown. So, you know, the message is clear. We are the moral high ground. We are the technical watchdogs. NRC is derelict in its duty. So, we're doing the right thing. We just got to up the volume to 11 and get this done all across the country.
Okay. Well, Rochelle, now let me ask you a question here. When you were talking about the deal, is there a loophole whereby Pacific Gas and Electric could turn around and reverse their field and go ahead and ask for a license renewal in this agreement?
The point of a pin would be the loophole. There is virtually nothing they can do. They started out the negotiations by saying, we don't need this plant and we can't afford this plant. Absent skyrocketing natural gas prices, the failure of the wind and solar industry, absent a complete change in the forward thinking of the state legislature and state oversight agencies, and I don't see any of that happening. I guess there's a slight possibility. There's a slight possibility, but it's about anything. But I don't see PG&E wanting to go back on this. I think they want to get beyond nuclear. A little plug for you, Kevin. I think they want to get beyond nuclear. I think they want to be, I think, everyone sees California as a non-nuclear state, as a leader on energy efficiency and energy renewables, and the forward-looking state to lead the nation in many things. And I think that that's where we want to be. I think the media has done a good job of saying, yeah, I think California can do it. I think state agencies are behind this. I don't see California stepping back from this. I don't see anyone stepping back from this. I think the workers themselves are really pledged to, okay, we have 9 more years. If we are lucky, we have 9 more years. But quite honestly, about 60% of the workforce could retire in the next 9 years. So the attrition just in general populations for nuclear power plants, retirees are pretty high.
Okay, Rachel, Rochelle Becker, you're at a4nr.org, is that right?
That's correct, Harvey.
Kevin Camps here at beyondnuclear.org.
Right.
And, Manager, what is your website?
Just clearwater.org.
Okay. So, let's go back to California. We're just running out of time here, but, I'm actually going to be on a radio show right after this, and I'm going to be asked what I would say to Gavin Newsom about his vote on to allow Diablo to escape the EIR. My inclination is to say, look, it's the law. Ronald Reagan signed this thing, and no matter what the deal might be, they should be doing these EIRs. Would you agree with me, Rochelle Becker, on that?
Well, I think they should do an EIR. I think they will do an EIR when the decommissioning comes up, which is in just a couple of years. I think they will close the plant. I think that a lot of the things that the EIR might involve are things that are in a part of the negotiated part of the settlement, the joint proposal, which will be the settlement. So I think always asking elected officials and or appointed officials to do their job is a good thing, Harvey, and why we ask them. It's just we're just not suing them over it.
Now, you have said to me personally that you think Diablo might shut earlier than the expiration of the license. Can you talk about that?
Well, as plants age, they need to replace large components. But if you are on a trajectory to close your plant and you need to make a large investment, you can't pencil it out any further. You can't depreciate it any further than the closing date of the plant, which is 2024. 2025.
Okay, I guess we're going to have to close on that. Thank you so much, Manny Joe Green, Kevin Camps, and Rochelle Becker. We'll be back next week with another post-nuclear Zoetopia Green Power Wellness Show. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.